high and a hoo.
All right. Good morning. There we go. This is Brother Aaron, a.k.a. Brother A-Dub, and...
Sister Carol.
That don't sound like Sister Carol.
Sister Carol in the studio.
Yeah, okay. Let me pause that. All right, so... The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speaker. They do not necessarily represent WEFT, its board of directors, station manager, Prairie Air, Incorporated... Associates also should have been included in there. Basically, what you hear down here, charge it to Brother Aaron or Sister Carol, whoever the air shifters are who are speaking at that time. So, all right, y'all know that it's Black History Month, African American History. I don't know what you want to title it.
Black History?
Yeah, well, I don't necessarily like Black History myself personally.
Why not?
I don't know. I just think that it's Black as a color. I don't know if it really captures us as a people. You know what I mean? But I understand the point. That's just a broader discussion that we could possibly get into if necessary. But this is my show. I mean, you're more, you know, I invite people to come down here and hang
Excuse
out with me.
I invite folks
to come down here and hang out with me. But the door swings both ways. If they don't like my show. They can go. They don't have to say.
Was sick and dying yesterday, and now it's his show today. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. I got you.
So we got a few things going on. First, I want to say happy Born Day to all you Aquarians out there in the month of February. And on my birthday, February the 7th, a gentleman sent a post to me saying that a happy anniversary to you and your mother on this Born Day and your birthday, which was a very interesting way of wishing someone well on their Born Day, but including the mother who gave birth to them.
Absolutely.
In that particular day. And I've always thought about this, so I thought that was a very interesting way to say that it was a happy anniversary to you and your mother on this day that you were born and that she gave birth. So shout out to all the mothers out there, especially mine, Evangelist Prophetess Valerie Ammons. So I just wanted to say that to y'all. Hope you all are tuned in. If you are up and awake, you have had your caffeine or whatever it is that you get up and get moving, whatever you use
start
to get yourself
day.
Going. Please give somebody else a call and let them know that Brother A-Dub and Sister Carol are live and on the air right now at WEFT 90.1 FM on your listening dial. Or you can also go to www.weft.org and click on Listen Live, and they can hear us all over the globe if they want to tune in. And if you want to participate in this conversation, you can give us a call at 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. Again, that's 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545.
I have a birthday coming up this month as well.
Yes, you do.
I do.
Yes, you do. February 24th.
February 24th.
February
24th is Jelani's 21st birth, born day.
There you go.
My 21st birth. that don't sound right. 21 babies. Now, Jelani, who just happened to come up from Jackson, has passed through Champaign-Urbana for a quick second on his way to Chicago. But his birthday is next week, and he'll be 21 years old, which is like amazing. It's amazing. So I'm wishing him born day. Thank you.
Yes, indeed.
And for my poor baby who at home, Amir is at home, y'all. So I started off thinking our house.
You
want to
tell him why? You know he's at home?
Yeah, Amir is homesick.
With this, is it Norovirus that's going on?
It's passing quickly. So 2 weeks ago, I was home sick on a Friday evening, Saturday, Sunday.
Saturday or Saturday?
Saturday.
We got to get that introduced as a day of the week.
Sarah. Okay. And then Aaron came home sick three days ago. Oh, was it Friday too?
Yes.
Oh, so it was a Friday thing. And then Amir woke up this morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. Very, very sick.
Yes.
But Daddy jumped into action, y'all. Let me tell y'all. We were asleep, 4 o'clock in the morning. We started hearing this violent.
We don't need to get into all those details. They understand that. What do you call?
What's a
projectile?
Projectile. Mm-hmm. Illness. And he jumped up out of the bed, ran up in there. Poor baby was all over the place. But he got in motion and took care of him, got him back in bed. So he's homesick. Y'all wish him well. And
you all should just be mindful that it just seems to have to run its course.
Yeah.
It seems to be affecting some people different. I didn't have the complete type of, I think, illness that Carol experienced and that Amir is now experiencing. Yeah. But I was definitely down and dizzy and headache and all that type of stuff for a couple of days, just resting up. And
drink a lot of fluids, wash your hands a lot.
But in your household, try to spray, keep the germs Lysol. Down or yeah. whatever. But let folks know. I mean, if it's in your house, then people who come to visit are probably going to get it.
So don't let them do that. Don't spread it. It's called Noros.
Something like that. I'm not exactly sure.
I did look it up this morning.
Yeah.
So please be cautious. The weather is pretty nasty. So, you know, just be cautious. If you feel unwell, stay at home. It's actually spreading pretty quickly in the community. So glad Aaron is back on the mic and feeling well.
I'm feeling much better.
Fortunate for Amir, he's out today, not feeling good at all. So if you're out there not feeling well, we certainly wish you a speedy recovery. Drink a lot of fluids, get you some orange juice, and be careful about your, what they say, the electrolytes dropping.
Mm-hmm.
So drink a lot of fluid and just rest, because that's the only thing that helped us get through the last couple of weeks. So with that, it is Black History Month, and Aaron and I love to debate a lot of topics. And Black History is one of them that we debate.
Debate? What are you talking about?
We do. You debate everything. We're debating. We don't disagree. We just simply debate different ideas, right? Okay. He said he don't like the term Black History, and I like the term Black History. That's a debate.
Well, it could end up being a topic of debate.
Yeah. But today we want to know, what is Black History to you? Am I too loud?
You're a little amped up and stuff, but it's okay. I'm going to turn you down.
It's the vitamins.
Okay. All right. So can we do the announcements first before we get into all this other stuff? All right. So you have an event coming up on the 15th, on Monday, right?
I do. I have a community discussion coming up, Solutions to Gun Violence. It's February 15th. 2016 at the University YMCA, which is located right on Wright Street, 1001 South Wright in Champaign. We will provide refreshments for you at 5 o'clock. So come right after work. Discussion and presentation starts at 5:30. We've invited a couple groups to join for this discussion. Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, and Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence is coming to our community to do a presentation in town hall. Now we've had, is it 9 shootings in our community in the last year? I think it's about 9. And it's been so unfortunate because we've lost so many young people in the last year to gun violence in the community. And we haven't come up with, on a national level, certainly we've not seen the amount of gun policies that would reduce gun violence in communities. But we also have a real need to go to the root of the gun violence. And so the community discussion is going to talk about some of the root issues around gun violence. But an interesting fact that we found, did you know that 90% of guns used in crimes nationwide came from only 5% of the gun dealers? So this issue can be focused on, I think, it can be focused on in a somewhat of a very limited way. But we'll talk about that on Monday, February 15th. And we want you to come for this discussion because we're trying to figure out what policies
what
we need to pass.
What time and where?
I did say that. You were
just
texting.
Asking you to repeat.
University YMCA, freshmen's at 5, presentation start at 5:30, and we'll have a couple mothers who've lost their children also tell their personal stories. It's not just a policy focus. It is also a personal focus on the stories of people who are suffering through this gun violence. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be present during this town hall
And I guess we should also extend this before we get deeper into the other topics and stuff like that, that there's something connected also. Well, this isn't connected to it, but there's something else that's going on in the policing community. They seem to have kicked off this campaign that's going to focus on guns and drugs. I don't particularly care for the second aspect of it for different reasons. I'll get into that at some other time. But I do believe that there's some work being done around the gun violence. There was some individual who was picked up recently by the police department. I believe it was Champaign Police Department, but it's a task force that is made up of all the different local law enforcement, and they have a focus that's going on as well. So I'm sure some of them may possibly be in attendance at this as well.
Well, I think that Monday, we've certainly reached out to the both departments, and because it is, they feel that it would be more focused on a particular policy, they may not participate in that way in this discussion. And so I'm sure we'll have others in the future, but in this discussion is really focused on, you know, the families, what's really happening to the families as a result of the gun violence, and what they feel should be done on the policy level. And some of this may be national policy as well, but certainly what can we do on a state level to address the amount of gun violence that's taking place, and to deal with some of these issues around gun dealers that we've not been able to deal with for generations, I believe.
All right. So I wanted to do it's a quick piece, and it's a prelude, basically, for us to start this conversation. But I wanted to make sure we got all of our announcements out of the way. There is another announcement that I want you all to be aware of. On every Thursday, the Breakfast Club gets together and we do a Speak Truth to the People. It's an hour, maybe a little bit more than an hour long presentation and discussion. We come in, we open up, we welcome, we do a cultural component, which is poetry or song or something like that. And then we have one person, either someone from the community like myself or a Byron Clark or someone else in the community. Also, it could be a professor like Lou Turner or Sundiata Chajua, who share information for about 15 minutes. Even Brother Larice did a presentation on self-defense once before. So we've had several different conversations and presentations, and then we have a discussion about that. Now, this particular piece, of course, being Black History Month, I wanted to focus because this is for, it's aimed at the Black community or the African-American community, Africans born in America, whole long discussion we could have about that whole thing. And we will get into that this morning, so I hope that you will stay tuned. But we do that every Thursday at the Whip Barbershop from 6:30 to 7:30, right? And it is indeed right in the heart of the community. We do encourage you to come on out, and it's been very fruitful. Everyone who attends always says that they walk away with something, and they know something, they learn something that they didn't learn before, and they're able to participate in a dialogue that's very unique because it brings together those of us who have been walking these streets, also with our professors who are very scholarly and very knowledgeable about the history and how to tie things together. And so it's a perfect fusion of information and of qualitative and quantitative information, meaning data as well as stories, all coming together to give us some direction. So again, that's 6:30 to 7:30 at the Whip Barbershop. We call it Speak Truth to the People. And this is aimed primarily at the African-American community. So we want Black folks to come to this, y'all. That's what we're saying. And then one more thing is on March 19th. It's a little bit ways away, but we wanted you to start to plan for it now. March 19th, Carol is bringing in one of Champaign's own, Mr. Gene Hicks, who is now living up in the suburban area, I think. Bolingbrook in Illinois. But he's been there for a few years. But Gene was a... he grew up in this community for years, y'all, and he did break dancing in this community. He made music. He did parties, lived out in Dobbins Downs. He did karate. A lot of you all know Brother Gene, G the Man, but he's doing something now called Hip Hop Fit. He has taken hip hop and hip hop music and dance and created his own workout and own health exercise videos off of that, using the latest music that's being played in the clubs and all that kind of different stuff, and made dance a dance video or a dance routine for exercising out of it. And so Carol's going to bring him here to town March 19th, and it's going to be a hip hop fit class. And you want to expound upon that a little bit?
Yeah, the hip hop fit class is, you know, when I personally got the videos of Gene, and they're great. They're fun. They're high energy. Got to have a little stamina. When I first got the videos, I was like, oh, this is great. We should have him here. He's from Champaign, so we should invite him back. I called Sam Banks at the Boys and Girls Club and said, hey, we want to do a health and fitness, session at the Boys and Girls Club. It's a little different for me to, you know, most people are expecting me to host, you know, public policy debates and town halls. And I thought that this was a great way for us to really highlight the need of fitness in our community. It's fun. You can do your same dances that you know how to do, that you would be doing at the club or wherever you go. But you can do it with a group of people, exercise, get your sweat on, lose some weight, and just really enjoy yourself. So we wanted to introduce Hip Hop Fit with Gene Hicks back to Champaign, Urbana. He's homegrown, and we hope that you'll join us March 19th at the Boys and Girls Club. And it's at 6. It starts at 6. At the Boys and Girls Club. If you go to my website, it's
which is what?
Carol Ammons for staterep.com.
Oh, you can say them T's now when you start doing, you want to announce your website, huh? Okay.
Carol Ammons for staterep.com. Mm-hmm. And you can get information about the session. There's a small fee because, of course, we want to compensate our brother for coming down and doing the show for, doing the, class for us, but it's very small, very minimal. But we'd love for you to come and do some hip hop fit with State Rep Carol Ammons. And I'm gonna do it as long as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. But Brother Ada may actually come and join us too. So anyway, it should be fun. We hope you'll join us.
I can snake, Carol, and bop and dab too. I don't know what you're
talking
about.
Ain't no snaking in that video. The Carol Ammons for staterep.com. And it goes to Black History Month. This young brother has truly, I think, blazed a path that's different. He's blazed a different path. He has a black belt in martial arts. Again, he used to be a breakdance teacher. Mm-hmm. He's a choreographer.
Done movies and videos.
He's a rapper. He's been in movies. He's auditioned and I think found a small role on Empire. I mean, it is an impressive resume for a young guy who's just saw his dream, saw his goal, and he began to chase it. And I think
I don't know
black
if we
history.
Could call Gene a young guy anymore.
Well,
right?
I guess
he's
not.
Older than you, and you call him a young guy.
I mean, I guess he's not a young guy in that sense, but we still.
But he
I
looks
young,
and he feels young because he's been following his dream. He's in the best shape of his life because of this teaching that he's been doing in Hip Hop Fit. He saved other people's lives. They've lost tremendous weight, and they just love being in the class.
It's fun.
And
it's fun. Really, really fun.
It is fun. That is the keyword. That's
and
right.
So instead of having a town hall about hip hop fitness or a health fitness fair, this time we decided to actually engage in the actual activity of fitness. And so we hope you'll join us for that March 19th.
All right. And we'll come back to it. We'll make these announcements again at the end of the show. So again, you're listening to Higher Ground WEFT 90.1 FM when you're listening dial. One of the most dynamic radio stations in all of East Central Illinois, alternative radio stations. We do have our sister stations like WRFU. It's WRFU 104.5. And then there's also, we love
WILL.
No, I wasn't going to say that, but
you
can go with WILL. I'm okay with that. I was just saying that's not what I was going to say. I was going to say WBCP 1580 AM. So you have some places where you can find good information, but there's nothing like WEFT to me because I've been down here for.
Well,
that's right. We've been down here for so long, and I'm a transition now into our Black History information that we're going to share, and I would like to take just for a moment and honor many of our black soldiers and folks who have come before us with just a, if I had it, I would do a libation, but just a quick acknowledgement of people like John Lee Johnson, right? And I was listening to a tape that we found, a WEFT tape that we had, where we played a snippet of him talking to some young girls, I believe at All Girls Radio. I'm not sure who they were.
Yes, it was.
But he was asking them a question. He said, so who will be the next John Lee Johnson? Right. And I remember calling in to that show and saying that I will. Right. And I remember him asking them, do you understand what I'm saying? And they said, no, we don't. Are you saying that you want us to be like you? He said, no, I'm asking you who will next defend the black community. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm asking you. That's what I mean by being the next John Lee Johnson. I'm not saying you have to look like me and act like me and stuff. I'm saying who will next defend the black community? And I think that's the question that we want to continue to ask, because there is no success without a successor, right, Hub? There is no success without a successor. So we should always be training up our young people and the next generation to look and say, who's going to next take this mantle and defend our community? And there's a need for us to defend our community. There's a reason why there's a Black Lives Matter, and there's a reason why there's a Black History Month. So history is a clock that people used to tell their political History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells a people where they have been, what they have been, where they are, and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child. That is a quote from the late great historian, scholar, Dr. John Henrik Clark. And he's telling us, when we were talking about this today, not to just talk about our history from the standpoint of this is what happened, but for, so that you can learn from it and grow from it, mm-hmm. and see where you must go next. So February is observed as, quote, Black History Month, end quote, in America. Its precursor, Negro History Week, was created by Dr. Carter G. Woodson in 1926 and observed on the second week of February. A staunch Republican, Woodson chose that week in that month to honor the birthdays of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. Woodson created Negro History Week because Black Americans and their accomplishments were largely left out of the educational curricula of that time. Where Blacks were mentioned, it was usually very demeaning imagery or discriminatory ideas. Woodson founded the Association for the Study of Negro, now African American, Life and History in 1915 and the Journal of Negro History in 1916. He was dedicated to helping educate Black and white Americans about Blacks and their accomplishments and potential in a way that would benefit everyone. His week-long observance was expanded to become Black History Month, officially recognized by the U.S. government in 1976. Okay, so you're talking about founded a Negro History Week in 1915, a Negro History Journal in 1916, but the week-long observance was expanded to become a month and officially recognized by the government some 60 years later. Unlike it often seems to be today, Woodson never intended Black history to be about Black first and a parade of Black icons. Woodson was a scholar. He intended this observance as a means to get around the institutional hatred of the era and ultimately have this new information included in the teaching of American history, period. In particular, Woodson wanted Black Americans to understand the strong family values, work ethic, sense of individual responsibility, spirit of entrepreneurship, and incredible dignity, and I should say credible dignity, that was indicative of Black Americans and their African ancestors. This educational pursuit was also important to Woodson because he felt that historical awareness would inspire Black Americans of his time to avoid becoming dependent on government to do for them what they could do for themselves. Woodson also believed that if white Americans knew the true history of Blacks in America and in Africa, it would help overcome negative stereotyping. So Negro History Week was envisioned as a tool to develop and cultivate new awareness and new critiques. It was about unity. It was not a basis for ethnocentric pride and cultural divide, the path radical Black Americans on the left have pursued over the past few decades. I personally take advantage of the national spotlight. that Black History Month provides to educate others about the real history leftist scholars rewrote or ignore and stress the original purpose of Negro History Week. Woodson's vision was that someday a special week or month would no longer be required in order to appropriately honor Black Americans and their accomplishments. Black history is American history and a year-round school curricula relevant to all. But that won't occur under the oversight of the U.S. Department of Education as long as there continues to be a left-wing domination of public education. When we segregate months to highlight ethnicities and genders, we cease to simply recognize accomplishments and instead encourage disunity among Americans of all stripes. I don't know if they messed it up there. So anyway, he says, I pray for a day when Dr. Woodson's desire to observe Negro history comes to proper fruition. So, I mean, I read the piece there. I pulled it up just to kind of show the history and where this came from, because a lot of people have no idea who Carter G. Woodson is. One of the books that I love that he wrote was The Miseducation of the Negro, one of the early books that I read when I was trying to find my way or to find mm-hmm. some level of consciousness. So it's a book that I certainly recommend. It was an easy read, and it was very, very full of very good information. So
I think the concept of Black History Month, as the article illustrates, has lost its focus, or has been co-opted. I would say more co-optation than actually the loss of focus. I remember about a week ago we were in session, and Representative Flowers was upset about a bill that was passed before I came to the House that made it optional to teach history. So part of this, we're currently part of because of the leaning on testing so much, they actually remove civics from school. So you don't get civic education anymore mm-hmm. in school. So you're not teaching children the connection between them and their government, which is civics. And then they limited history and made it optional. So when we went to register a mirror for high school, African-American history, other histories on the other side were actually optional. They weren't part of the actual curriculum, and you would have to choose it to take African-American history. And that is a good illustration of something that Mary Flowers said to me. She said, in order for them not to have to deal with the real history of America, you just eliminate it altogether. So you don't have to teach it. Or you teach it in such a limited focus that is never connected to what Carter G. Woodson's purpose of Black history was, which is to highlight the accomplishments and contributions of African people born in America to the American story, not to just talk about, like some pseudoscience on the other side, or to exclude the realities of African cultural experience, which is being excluded from the curriculum and from the larger debate in the society.
I want to come back to something that's,
which is interesting on a political scheme, but we'll come back to that. That now Black people are in focus again, but go ahead.
Okay. Because we're not going to turn this show into politics, Representative.
It's hard. Everything is connected.
It's important that you have to have policies, like, because you're talking about the education curriculum, what will govern, what will be taught in the school.
What will be taught.
I do think it's important, and I see why politics are important. I'm just not going to let you turn this show into, it's my show. And I'm an elected official too, but we ain't going to do all that.
You are what? Elected.
Kevin Elliott Counseling. I'm going to do my underwriting announcement now. And our show was underwritten by Kevin Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has 30 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including state employee insurance, is accepted. There is also a self-pay sliding scale. You can contact Kevin Elliott or his staff at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That is ELLIOTT CounselingGroup.com. Or you can give him a call at 217-398-9066. And we thank Kevin Elliott Counseling for their underwriting and all their service in our community. Yeah, so that's 217-398-9066, Kevin Elliott Counseling. So I want to come back to the statement that you made about contributions and to the community. And I want to remind everybody out there listening, we're about 30 minutes into the show when you can give us a call at 217-359-5483.
What is Black History to you? Or 217,
you know, I, look, you're going to have to display some discipline down here on my show. Okay, you can't just jump in while I'm talking and giving the phone up and start saying stuff now. You just got to be patient. I'll call on you. Raise your hand. 217-359-5483. Or 217-359-6545. You raising your hand? All right. So I'm getting back to the statement that you just made about contributions, because when we did Gus did a presentation at the Speak Truth, and he talked about Black history, and he read some of this, some of what I read on Carter G. Woodson. What we talked about was the need to move beyond first, like, okay, you were the first African-American to be elected to represent this, the 103rd district. Now, but there's a story behind all of that. There's a reasoning why that was the case, right? And so when you focus solely on those contributions or those accomplishments, the first this and first that, you miss the overall context of the struggle that went along with that, right? So the question is never asked why. You talk about this when you did your MLK speech, right? How do you walk into a space where there are no people of color, no women, right? And you don't raise any concerns or questions or objections, right? So there's no analysis of how, why this is this way. And there's no social critique of sexism, classism, racism, right? You don't get a chance to get into any of that. And so while we want to celebrate the individual contributions, that has to be done in a context of why, which also, I remember listening to a couple of people talk about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who would walk out into the middle of Michigan Avenue in the height where Black men were being gunned down and murdered with impunity, kind of like now, right? And take the position that he was taking with the white community, right? I think it actually contributes to the courage, the context, and the character of the individual when you talk about the context in which they were working in. Right. It wasn't a safe environment. It wasn't cool. Right. You know, it wasn't easy for Ida B. Wells to take the position that she took on lynching. Right. In the South. It wasn't easy for Medgar Evers. It wasn't easy for Martin Luther King. It was not done in a safe space. So when you talk about the context of in which these individual contributions were achieved or these accomplishments were made, you really give even more credibility to the courage and to the importance and the dignity of the individual. But you also then highlight the struggle that was then and that is now. Does that make sense to you?
I'm not sure.
Are you still mad because I had to stop you from interrupting me? Mm-hmm. It's okay. You get over it, babe. It's okay. You got to get.
I don't know what to think. You got to tell me what to think.
I got to tell you what to think.
Please.
I want you to say, Aaron, you're right. All the time.
Aaron, you're right.
Say all the time. There you go. You got it now. I mean, what else is there? You heard it right here, 90.1 FM. Sister Carol said, Aaron is always right. Don't let her forget that, y'all. Give us a call. Somebody down here, 359-5483. Break up the tension. Sister Carol's mad at me. 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. And I can show you the proper etiquette when you're on a radio show with somebody and it's their show. You can't just be interrupting them while they talking. You got to wait for them to give you the mic. But anyway, go ahead, Sister Carol. It's your show. It's your turn.
I'm going to stop coming to this show. I think I started this show about 10 years I've been on this show.
We started this show about 10 years
ago. Oh, did
we?
Oh, there is a we.
Yeah. But then when you left to go.
I didn't leave. What did I go?
You disappeared for about like 2 years because you was running some campaign to be some. What is it, a position that you're in now?
They put me off the radio for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Can you believe that?
Yes, indeed.
And so now somebody has a historical blimp in his memory and think for some reason that I left the show, and therefore now it's his show, and he can tell me that I can't say anything in between his, and I can't do the announcements, and I can only fill in when he tells me to. And you got, y'all better call in, or it's going to be some stuff up in this studio.
All right. So I want to make sure that the phone is working. I don't.
Yeah, because I'm going to throw it at him if he don't get right.
I'm going to call myself. Let me see if it's working.
They mad at you. See, you shouldn't treat me like that. So they like, I don't want to call and talk to Brother Aaron. He trying to shut down Sister Carol on a radio show she co-founded. Fact or fiction?
It must be fact. Ain't nobody calling.
Better watch it.
So what do you think about what I just shared? I talked about not just looking at an individual contribution and stuff like that. I think some of those things are great, from traffic lights to open heart surgery. This is one of the other things that James Baldwin talks about a lot, right? And his interviews and his conversations and debates. Look, you're a man, baby, and you don't have to study your history to prove your dignity or to prove that you're somebody. You should study your history because it's your history and it's relevant to who you are and where you're going. But you shouldn't be trying to respond to the degradation or the misdefining of you by white folks, right? Or anybody else. You should be studying your history because it's your history and what it brings to you. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air. Please turn your radio down.
Thank you.
All right, go right ahead.
Yes, good morning and greetings to this Valentine's couple I'm listening to. hope that all is well and the pony is getting along okay and all that good stuff. But
yes, indeed.
Regarding Woodson, isn't he suggesting that Black history belongs to everybody?
Well, hold on just for a second. I had a second caller on 6545. Caller, are you there?
Yeah.
Just hold on
okay,
for a second.
Okay, so just hold on for a second, and we're going to take the first call first, okay?
Yeah. Okay. Only mentioning that, didn't Woodson suggest that Black history is for everybody? Black people first, but everybody.
I believe Black history is for everybody.
He was definitely talking about history in the context, Black history in the context of American history. And one of the things that I'm arguing is that it's not just American history, it's world history.
Thank you. That's what I'm getting at. The Anglo-American has gone all over the world and made an observation that he is the least accounted, if you want to call it that. I think there's no such thing as race, but he is the least accounted skin representative on the earth, and that has put him in a position of defense. So he feels that if whatever promotes a lack of information based on promoting himself, then he is in a better defensive position if the truth be told.
Hmm. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling in, man. Stay tuned, okay?
Peace.
All right, second caller. Please go ahead. You're on the line.
This is Marvin. I'm trying to help y'all avoid marital civil war in public. How you doing, brother?
We are doing great. How about you?
Yeah, I'm blessed. y'all are making me laugh my behind off this morning.
Well, we're glad we can bring a little bit of joy to everybody's life at our own expense, even sometimes.
Anyway, I heard you talking about Black history is world history.
Mm-hmm.
You think we have to first start with how do we begin to get schools and colleges and universities to recognize that Black history is American history, as opposed to treating it as a dessert that you may want to pick up or not on the a la carte tray. And so I just wondered if you had any ideas, solutions. For example, in Arizona, they've eliminated ethnic studies of any sort as a way to get away from even examining Black history, Latino history, anything that is actually a part of American history that hasn't been included in the mainstream. So, and I know here in Illinois, during Black History Month, it's a requirement that Black history be taught, but I also know that a lot of rural schools do not do that, especially in southern Illinois, where I was raised. So how do we begin to make people understand the necessity of including Black history as part of American history, much less world history?
Well, you know, one of the things that comes to mind for me is, first and foremost, that we have to continue organizing and fighting around some of these things to build coalitions to be able to take a stance. Because if we don't have a broad and strong network to take a stance to say, listen, either I want this passed as legislation and we're going to continue to work and organize until we get it passed so that it can be a mandate for the state of Illinois or the Board of Education, then, you know, Carol carrying a bill or something like that and she can't get the votes for it, it just requires just a big, a much more concerted effort, I believe, on our part to push for something like that.
It's already law in Illinois.
But that was for, I thought you said it was just for Black History Month.
No, it's just Black History, period. It's already a law in Illinois. What she just said is that in rural communities, they don't teach it at all.
But I thought, I misunderstood. I thought you said it was just Black History Month they had to do it, but not as a part of the entire curriculum. Maybe I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
No, it's a both and. Both of y'all are right. That, you know, for as far as the schools are, and like, for instance, here in Illinois, it's supposed to be taught. I'm not sure how much it's taught actually here in Champaign, Urbana, to be quite honest with you. But also, this Black history period being included as American history across the board.
Well,
maybe
the other,
that's too big of a question.
Well, no, I don't think so. I actually just think that we have to reimagine what it looks like. And the question that you're asking, I think, helps us do that. So I'm thinking about these panels that you have at your office, Carol, where actually community members are getting together and formulating bill proposals that either can go to the state legislator. I don't know if this is something that just goes to the Board of Education or if this is something that individual
I mean,
school
this is
boards,
a school board.
Okay.
Part of it is a school board level because it is already law. It is your school boards and your curriculum that does not address what is already in the books.
And so
right?
Sundiata and Lou were working on something like this as well. I'm just wondering if there's an example of a good blend, somehow you've taken a textbook that was quote unquote American history, which we all know was 99% white except Crispus Attucks, and maybe I Have a Dream was in there, right, in one of those books.
Don't forget Sojourner.
Oh, right. Okay, so you 97%, right? Okay, right. You know. But and then you have another one that was really more focused on African-American history and have been blended in such a way or the contributions of Black folks have been infused into a workbook that we would deem appropriate, that the Black community would say, OK, that's fair. Where is there an example of that? Or do we have to actually write that or create a book like that and present it as a proposal to our school board?
Well, Marva, can I ask you a question right quick?
Sure.
Because I don't know if you know this, but out of the University Education Policy Study Department here, I thought part of their research was around curriculum and curriculum development.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they teach that here at the university?
Yeah.
So it would seem to me that I think there's two problems here. One of them is that all of your textbooks come from a state that is historically anti-Black, Texas. That's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the content that are that, of course, I don't remember if, Aaron, if you remember the City Colleges of New York, who are the scholars that did the study around curriculum development for African Americans in school? We had them, we interviewed
Dr. Jeffries.
Dr. Jeffries, thank
Leonard
you.
Jeffries. Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Jeffries and several other scholars had already done the research around integrated education, meaning integrated mm-hmm. history. They've already done this. We've just not had representation at the school board level to enforce what is already in existence, certainly in these in our local community. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the big problem. You have school boards that don't make sure their superintendents are carrying out these things, which is a school board level issue. And then you have, I think you have educators and scholars that are coming out of your university system that are doing the research around curriculum development, but they don't take it to the next level, which is implementation. So they do the research part, but it doesn't get implemented anywhere. And so I think your students come out with less self-esteem, less awareness, not all students. And I ain't talking about just black students, all students to address racism. I think you got to address it across the board by telling the truth and the true story. And that's what, to me, is not happening.
So, sister, would you be willing to follow through with Dr. Jeffries and see if, what you can find? And then I'd be happy to share it with some folks and see if we can get a presentation to Urbana School Board as well as the Champaign School Board.
Sure. But okay. Let me say this, too. The other part of the equation has to be parents.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, we have quite a number of people that are active in the community, but I also know that, how do I say this without getting guillotined, that we have a lot of parents that are so tired because they're working, and they just don't have the knowledge or the time, or both, to become invested in this. And I think we have to make a little bit more concerted effort to try to get not just black parents, but white parents involved in, you know, reaching out to the school and asking the hard questions. Well, why, you know, why isn't, you know, this in the curriculum as part of the curriculum instead of as an aside? That makes sense?
It does, and it makes me really understand why radio stations like this and a lot of the work that we do have going on in the community is so important, and why everything that we do, even from an organizing community or just from a structural, if it's the NAACP or whatever, there has to be these educational components that take people beyond their comfort zones and the area or the circumference of their current knowledge. We have to learn something new, because I agree, and I made this statement recently on a panel discussion, that I really wasn't real empathetic to a lot of the excuses. I called them excuses at the time, and I've later clarified that, you know, I mean, I'm running ragged trying to do everything, that the contributions that I'm making, right? And so I think everybody else has to step up too. And but I realize that some people just do not have the flexibility that other people have. But I do believe that every one of us, regardless, not irregardless, regardless of your circumstance, I believe that there's something else that you could offer, because we all have to make some level of sacrifice. You have to choose. Yeah. Okay, so there is a little bit more that each of us can do. But this is also, what to Carol's point, why your school board representatives have a very level of awareness and consciousness that pushes these issues. When I go to Urbana and sit on that city council, they know every meeting, every time they ask me, or every time something comes up about business or something like that, I'm going to be talking about how African-Americans affected by this. How are they going to be included in this particular process? What I'm saying is that there's something that they know I'm going to bring to the table, and there's no way for you to just dismiss that. I'm not going to allow you to just dismiss it. So I do think it's very important for us to have those that representation. And I think that's also going back to your other point about even the white families needing to understand the need for a balance on a school board or something like that. Why you don't want a whole school board full of all white folks or whatever, because you don't get the representation of your community. You don't get these things fought for or presented in such a way that we can have some sort of balance.
And Marva, I really believe that if, I know I'll let you go after this, but if the history had been taught in the appropriate way, right, across the board to all students, regardless to what their ethnicity is, the true history of the country has to be taught as it is, not with a rosy colored glass so people feel better about themselves. You have to teach the true history so that you don't repeat the vile and racist behavior that created the previous history.
Exactly.
And that's what's not happening. So, you know, certainly this is an important discussion. I hope we continue it. And I certainly welcome you to if you have an opportunity to join our education panel. We look certainly welcome your participation in that.
Thank you.
All right.
You guys, I hope you're not going to throw anything now that you calm down.
No, we're good.
I ain't going to throw nothing now.
Thanks for calling, though.
Thanks for saving us.
Talking with me. Have a great weekend.
You all too. Right, you bye.
Too. Your mic is hot, so you got to kind of.
My mic hot.
Yes, indeed. All right. So,
good points.
It is very good points,
calls.
And this is why this cannot be. All right. You ready? You gonna do this with me?
Yeah. What we doing?
What is the struggle?
Oh. Okay.
This is Aaron's Black History Month, African History, Africans Born in American History Month. The title is, What is the Struggle? And that struggle is recapturing the captives. Minds lost because we've adapted and adopted ideas and definitions that tell us what black is. A whole month to discuss.
So we rush.
Demanding holidays and a place on a bus.
That don't lead back to Africa.
Putting men on pedestals that your enemies help you boost.
So you're stuck in a dream.
And the chickens rarely come home to roost. On this sojourn, we hide from truth. Bombarded daily by the brainwash, but the Renaissance poets are the stain wash for the spots scattered throughout the hood. On special occasions, we all hold hands and the complacent tell you,
it's all good.
Somebody died for you. I said, yeah, I know. Martin, Malcolm, Megger, and a bunch more too. But now, what that do? Even sinless, we still spiral into an abyss that's endless. Are we supposed to pretend this? Stealing of our souls wasn't done by
so-called Christians?
Oh, see, this must be mentioned because the most important thing stolen was
your attention.
Now, 12 minus 1 still leaves 11. And leadership ain't nothing but followers scared to go to heaven.
Be it in your mind or a place in the sky.
We all run from knowledge and ain't nobody rushing to die for what we believe in. Excuse after excuse is what they keep preaching. Do you know who you are? That you possess more energy than an atom bomb. Do you know you're a star? We scream progress because this month used to be a week. And that's why you're constantly told you're the meek, because the weak are fit to be slaves. Given dominion of the world, and this is how we behave, begging at an altar for forgiveness when we falter. Instead of coming at them in waves of consciousness, we indulge in nonsense. Thus, we perish while we breathe. Our children seethe with anger because they see us as hypocrites and cowards. So we beat them.
The way the slave masters did us.
We lie to them and destroy their trust.
The way the slave masters did us.
We feed them garbage like the slave masters did us. We give them no education like the slave masters did us. And then we fill them with the same fear that has captivated us. See, it's easy for punks to pop trunks and talk junk to other chumps. But if I ask you to stop selling dope and protect the hood, somehow I'm the chump. While the oil tycoons raise the price at the pump and sleep easy at night. But if I stick you up,
then it's a fight.
With our habitude, they figure, it'll take us another 50 years before we approach black the way we do nigger. Wow. You mean black is defined as void of power? And so what you think you've been given leeway, it's just a new way to reinforce inferiority. Sad and sullen is his story of our African memoirs. Why does this month only seem to remind us of deep scars instead of deep roots into Egypt? Because you've been clipped at the cerebral, tricked into thinking you're feeble. Did I say black also means evil? Listen, class, people are defined by culture, language, and a landmass. So worry of wrath from an illusion only contributes to your confusion and leaves you ignorantly defending an illogical conclusion. Who's in charge of your thought? That's the struggle. That's your boy, Brother Albert. We had to, thumbs up claps, and snaps and claps.
Who's in charge of your thought?
That is the struggle. 12 minus 1 still leaves 11, and leadership ain't nothing with followers that's scared to go to heaven, be it in your mind or a place in the sky. We all run from knowledge, and ain't nobody rushing to die.
So why Black History Month? Because you've been thoroughly miseducated.
That's right.
Miseducation of the Negro was not just a white paper.
Right.
It was written in a particular way so that what has happened can be revealed and then eliminated.
And this is why this Speak Truth, this stuff has been so phenomenal. To have Dr. Lou Turner and Dr. Chajua and Ken Salo and Gus and some of these other folks tie these real life experience together with history for us. Because now we're reading France Fanon's Wretched of the Earth. Right. And Fanon is talking
a group of people in the hood that got a reading group.
That's right.
Reading.
That's right. That's right.
And that's part of the
re-education, recapturing the captives. And I'm not talking about I'm talking about physically and mentally when I say that. Recapturing the captives, minds lost because we've adopted ideas and definitions that tell us what black is. And then you get a whole month to discuss. So you rush, right? So yes, this France Fanon is talking about decolonizing your mind. All these definitions and labels that your oppressor or that your colonizer has put upon you, you must reject. There's no path to your consciousness. There's no path to regain your humanity if you don't fight to free your mind.
Right.
Bam, let's just put a pin in it right there. This should be about decolonizing your mind. And I love James Baldwin said, you're a man, baby. Okay. You have to understand who you are because you need to know who you are, not in relationship to something else that somebody said you were. Okay. So if from our history, let's just put it like this. So from all the readings that I have seen in our history, we never referred to ourselves as nigger, N-I-G-G-A or N-I-G-G-E-R. So even this twist that we try to put on N-I-G-G-A, it's still in response to the definition that you were given as N-I-G-G-E-R. Therefore, you are not decolonizing your mind. You see what I'm saying with that?
You're accepting the status.
You're still accepting because you are defining yourself in response to a false definition, so you still come to a false conclusion.
Let me just say that if you don't have a copy of the most recent Public Eye newspaper, please pick up a copy of the Public Eye newspaper. I think my peas are popping. Pick up a copy because there are so many really great articles in there for this Black History Month, review. But part of the reason why I believe Black History Month certainly should be 365, right, which we do as parents to our children, we have, I think, 6 bookshelves in our house overflowing with books. They are literally overflowing with books that we pick up off the shelf and we share with the children and we teach them about their history, and not just the history in America, but the history of Black people in the world. We've been trying to educate ourselves because we were never taught in school much about all of these magnificent movements of people of color around the world, not just Black people, but people of color around the world. But we also wanted them to understand, how did we get here? And what I realize, whether it's in public bodies, what happens today, even around the issue of school curriculum, there seems to be a pushback that says, well, if we incorporate Black history, then in some way we are pointing fingers. This is what we hear in the State House all the time. Well, if you bring that up, it's like you're pointing fingers. Mm-hmm. We just got to get past that. The reason why you don't want accountability is to keep the status quo in place. Mm-hmm. You have to understand how you got poor housing stock versus others' people wealth building. Mm-hmm. That you have to understand that now. And you can't sweep that under the rug. You have to actually teach how this became the North End, right, versus how Savoy and Champaign developed. Mm-hmm. That's important because you can now explain why there are no businesses on the North End. You could also explain why it's high unemployment on the North End. You could also explain why the prison or incarceration rate, mm-hmm, reflects the population of the North End. You can actually explain all of that in context when you actually study it through the historical lens, the truthful historical lens.
Which is why we were talking about this cannot just be individual contributions, right?
It can be that.
I said it can't just be about individual contributions. You study our history in the context of history.
I get it.
Mm-hmm. So that there's certain things that contribute to this. And there's also, and this is one of the things that and we had a couple of people text and said that they're listening on the radio. You all make me so proud. I'm happy to be on your team. Love you too. Very powerful points that you're
Thank
making.
You.
The phone number is 217-359-5483. 217-359-6545 if you want to chime in and be a part of this conversation. There's an article you talked about. I think it's Natalie is her first name. I can't remember, but she's a student. She's a grad student, I believe it is. And she wrote, she did a nice piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably an introductory piece. There may be a series that she was talking about, mm-hmm, was coming onto how this came about, the housing and things like that that took place on the North End and how it became the North End. And this is an example of how when I say recapturing the captives, and we're trying to recapture the captives because our minds have been lost and we've adapted. So now we celebrate the North End, right? So there's a very rich history for African-Americans and the North End. But I wonder, where's the resistance to? Early on in the process, was there any resistance to these sort of shanty towns and these shacks that people lived in? I called my dad up, who moved here when he was 6 years old. I learned this understanding history is so profound because I didn't even know this about my own daddy. Born February 6, 1941. And I was born February 7, 1971. But I called my daddy and asked him, you know, what did you know about this? What's true about this article from your own memory? And he moved here when he was 6 years old and went to Lawhead Elementary School and was a part of the first class, or the first class, that went to Franklin Middle School. And he said, absolutely, we didn't have running water. We didn't have electricity in some of the houses. This was a very real situation for us when he moved here when he was 6 years old in 1946 or 1947. What these conditions were. And so I saw history come to life when I started asking my dad these questions about his experience growing up here in Champaign on the North End on Poplar Street. And so there's still a lot of this history that's alive and well in those and our elders who were here early in that time. And we don't even understand that history because it's not, I mean, no running water in the house. These children can't even live without a computer. Right. Or cell
exactly.
phone. Right.
Yeah.
We're talking about actual running water that my daddy went to work when he graduated elementary school. Right. Not what college. What you talking about? High school. And I'm going to work. I mean, that's difficult for me to imagine. Amir is going to graduate from elementary school. And we trying to see what you talking about registering him for high school. And he's like, no, I had to go to work.
Right.
So anyway, I think that I was looking for the resistance to this? Was there any resistance to this housing situation
for black people?
For black people,
but it was difficult to resist.
I understand. It's always difficult. I was just asking if it was. That's all.
No. I wasn't saying in that sense. I was saying in the sense of. I like to reverse the question a little bit, and I certainly encourage people to call who are listening, 217-359-5483. No matter what your ethnicity is, I'm interested in your thought as to who is responsible for, I don't want to say responsible, how do you really start to blend the reality of history, its impact on the current conditions? Right. How do you actually blend that? And how do you take responsibility for that? This article, I again encourage people to get it from the public eye. Something that's in here is really important because it's a lot in here that's really important. But something that really jumped out to me around housing discrimination. Housing as an American system is touted as the number one way to build wealth in America. Mm-hmm. So in order for you to build wealth, you have to have assets to attain that wealth so that it can grow. And housing or owning a home is one of the ways to do that. Well, we're not talking about 1920 or 1876 with the level of discrimination in slavery days or right after emancipation. We're talking about 1940 to 1960. You and I were born in the 70s, right? So only 10 years before we were even born, your father and your father's parents were deliberately discriminated against so that they could not build wealth to pass on to you.
In a capitalist society.
In a capitalist society. And it became institutionalized. And it said here in this particular part that there was the League of Women Voters, which I don't have enough history of the League of Women Voters, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it said in 1949, the League of Women Voters performed a shack study that investigated African-American housing in the North End. Of the random sample of 85 shacks, less than a third or 27 had faucets, just a faucet. The average room size was half the size of the smallest room in a house of standard construction in CU. This is not 1920. This is 1950, right? Your dad is a boy. Mm-hmm. He said, when asked how waste disposal was managed, one of the occupants replied, quote, "We just wait until dark and go out in the yard," end quote. In 1953, two local children were killed in a shack fire resulting from the structure burning so rapidly because they couldn't escape. It was just really bad plywood. Mm-hmm. Nearby conditions in the North End were similarly abysmal. There was no garbage pickup. It says they couldn't pick up because unpaved streets and no sewage disposal would come through because the roads were dirt. So they wouldn't come through and pick up the garbage. So people became ill and the public health department got involved in 1968. The public health condition says as late as 68, the public health department acknowledged the high degree of communicable diseases in the area as a result of the conditions. Yet despite having, quote, the authority to condemn dwellings, they considered it impossible to exercise this authority when there was no place for the people to move. Because they had segregated them, they couldn't move in these other areas of Champaign. So they said, we'll just leave it like it is.
Okay, can I jump in?
No, this is 1968. Social workers noted tensions in families living under makeshift conditions as well as lowered physical stamina and spread of disease. Racist stereotypes and circular reasoning reproduce such documented conditions. So then they began to say, well, you got to live over there because, you know, you have diseases and you have poor conditions and you don't take care of property. And so now you have to live there. And they repeated these racial stereotypes. And therefore, the North End developed in this enclave without real resources and investment into those communities. So I just wanted to finish the thought.
Okay. So, again, in context, I appreciate the article and I appreciate the learning of the covenants and how things were structured in a particular way. So, and that ended our people up in a enclave of and stereotypical viewpoints and all that. What's missing to me is there's what's always written out of our history is the resistance to all of this, right? I remember that there was a black garbage hauling company. I think it was Mr. Willis, used to live over in Ellis Subdivision somewhere. But I remember at one point I had an African-American garbage hauler that I used to go to his house, I believe, and I know it was over in Ellis Subdivision. So somebody out there listening, give me a call and tell me who that was. Because I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the black garbage haulers probably came out of this context that was created that wouldn't nobody else come pick up the garbage. So we'll do it right ourselves. We're going to, this is very much like Detroit and what Grace Lee Boggs was talking about, what's happening in Detroit, is that if you don't give us any city services, we'll do it for ourselves. This is what Carter G. Woodson was talking about. Stop begging other folks to do for you what you can do for yourself. Now, from a government standpoint, your taxes are supposed to give you a certain amount of services. There's no doubt about that. I understand that. I'm not saying that we shouldn't argue for that, we shouldn't fight for that, but there should be a balance between arguing and fighting for what your taxes provide for you and what you can provide for yourself in the face of all of this opposition, right? And all of this hatred, all this racism and stuff that we were experiencing. There still has to be a level of resistance in that oppressed people and to fight back against these things. And I was just wondering if there was a Mother Hattie or a Terry Townsend or somebody out there, a Jerry Ammons, somebody get called and say, look, this is something that we was there a housing group that was formulated? Was there something that the black community was doing to address some of those concerns when those babies got burned up? Where's
the rest of the story?
That's what I'm asking. That's all.
I'm sure the story is there. I remember watching Ta-Nehisi Coates, journalist from the Atlantic. He was on an interview and he did a study of the redlining in Chicago, and he didn't know, and certainly we didn't know, similar housing discrimination that was taking place. His research revealed that there was a group of black people who had, I think your line got cut off, whoever it is. Yeah. Just call back whoever that was,
y'all. 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545.
The point of Ta-Nehisi's research, though, just showed that there was a group of people who just did the rent strikes and said, We're not paying this mortgage that you're cheating us. You're actually cheating us out of money that you're charging us for this poor condition property. We're not paying it. And that's what started the whole discussion. So check out Ta-Nehisi Coates' article on housing discrimination and redlining.
Good morning, Carla. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, this is Reverend Dr. Evelyn Underwood.
Yes, ma'am. I was just thinking about you. It's a little loud, but it's okay. Go ahead.
Yes. Mr. Walter Willis was one of the Senator Haulers, and before that, Mr. Noble Dixon.
Noble Dixon, Walter Willis, okay.
Before Mr. Walter Willis was Mr. Noble Dixon, was our garbage hauler, Senator Hauler, who she was talking about, Dr. Ellis. He lives on the same street that we live on, Tremont Street. Mm-hmm. He used to live here on Tremont Street, Mr. Walter Willis.
Okay. Thank you so much for...
Before that was Mr. Noble Dixon. I'm sure a lot of people you name would know, like, who he was. Yeah, a lot of people of us had him, had both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But before, I think Bishop was saying that... maybe Mr. Walter Willis bought Mr. Noble Dixon when he gave it up.
Well, you know, this is a very important point. I was just thinking about you all, you and Mother Mary, Mother Brooks, and when we're thinking about fighting the encroachment of whether it's a university or Carl or whatever into the black community. And Carol and I were discussing this morning, mm-hmm. how relevant it is or how important it is for you all to continue to share the history with us so that we can see the bigger picture, those of us who are coming on a generation or two after you all. And I was thinking about why we have to learn from history, not just to sit here this morning to recite history, but to learn where the pockets of resistance were for our people. So, but also then to say, what are we going to do now? And one of the things that we can do is make sure that we are owning as much of our properties that we possibly can, and taking care of it, and making sure that we see this when it's coming, and then we can hold on to it and say that we're not going along with some of this big development that they want to do. We're not going to allow you to take our homes from us. We're going to stick together. So there's a lot of organizing and work that we have to do to make sure that the homeowners in our community and that the landlords in our community know that we want to preserve the history and the legacy of our community, and we don't want to be moved out, and we're not going to sit back and just let you come in with some new policies or some development to take our homes and our community from us.
Just like hundreds of people were at the city council meeting the other night about that preservation and all that. You see how they organize?
Yes,
you
ma'am.
Know, we want to resist. We do not want them to take our homes. You know, we don't want Carl, a hospital, and those folks in the University of Illinois to take our homes. Paul Hersey and Carlos Donaldson and all of us, when they wanted to, years ago, when they wanted to do some things to us, we fought when we wanted Dr. Ellis, and a lot of things happened in 1962. This used to be in a Spaggers field. My mom used to call it Spaggers. Used to be a Spaggers field.
What does that mean, Dr. Underwood?
No one, we couldn't live what we wanted to live. You know, I read the article that the young lady has in the Public Eye. There's a lot more to that, like Sister Carol was saying. It's a lot more. We just didn't, we tried to resist. And thus Dr. Ellis, and before Dr. Ellis, we had where did Grandma Cora live, Bishop? Carver Park and all of that. I mean, we CRISPR Attucks and all of that. You know, there were a lot of us and our ancestors and all tried to do things, but they crushed us.
Hold on, caller.
Okay, but anyway, let me let you go.
Well, we appreciate it because it's important.
Walking around doing things while we're listening.
Okay, but thank you.
I don't want to take other people's time.
No, thank you, Doc. We really, really appreciate that, Dr. Underwood. I would like to go a little bit further with you later, so y'all keep tuning in, okay?
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Go ahead, caller, you there?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was listening to your program, and I think that is... it's really awesome. What I would like to interject into it is that I believe that black people do not get to the root of anything. We have allowed society, white people, to band-aid things instead of getting to the roots. How can you move forward if you don't resolve what the problem is? If you don't resolve the problem, which is racism, which has led to we are not equal on jobs and schools, housing or anything, until you resolve racism, you're going to always walk this path. You might take a different street, but you're going to come to the same end. And until we resolve that, we're going to always have this problem. So I feel like we should be working and finding out what we can do to resolve it, or it's going to always repeat itself.
Do you, as you have worked on this question and you think about this question, and I know that you've been, just sort of mulling through a lot of different things, what do you think is something that can uproot and address racism? What do you think it comes from? Where do you think racism comes from?
It came from slavery. That's from my opinion. It came from slavery. And what it really comes from is that it's fear. Fear of from white people thinking that we're going to overtake them. That's fear. When you beat somebody like that and you just hate them because of their color, it's fear. And I believe that we need to like we're doing, we've made some strides. So yes, we can live in a house now that got running water and we have all those amenities right now. But there's other things that they take from us. like not, you know, not teaching us a quality education. And that's another thing. We need to educate our children on what is really, what we really contribute to this country. And it is vast what we contributed to this country.
Okay. Well, I like the idea, though, or the answer that you gave in relationship to fear. Why don't you expound on that just quickly? Because it's an interesting, I think, analogy of this. You know, you say that it's fear. You think racism is driven by fear. Talk about that a little bit more.
Well, when you are afraid of someone, you want to keep them inferior. You don't want them to be equal with you, because you are afraid when they obtain that equality, then they will grow faster than you. They will obtain things faster than you. It's just like, if I divide, I conquer. But if we stand tall and stop having that mindset that of fear, we have it because they've instilled it in us. Mm-hmm. We have it. But they generated it because they are afraid that if we come together, everything that they did, they didn't want us to speak, to speak our language, because they were afraid if we would come together, we would overturn that. And we didn't know our way back to Africa. So we out of fear, we out of survival mode, we did what we had to do. Well, now we need to do what we have to do again. All and right. That is to educate our children, and don't be afraid, because our children need to learn more and more and more. I had your sister.
Okay, wait, because I got somebody else that's on the other line.
Okay,
there.
Well, okay, but that's my opinion.
All right, thank you for calling. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, go ahead, caller. You there?
Good morning. This is Lyndon. How is everyone?
We are doing great, sis. How are you?
Well, one elder I want to add to the list that everyone is talking about, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. She's an ancestor now.
That's correct.
By genetic annihilation, that is two words that we need to be reminded of, because it sets a worldwide pattern, not only in these United States, in all of our universe here.
Hmm. You know,
thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for calling. You know, so this is three things that have happened. Well, two calls that have come to this particular point, and I don't want to expound on it too far. I don't think I'm prepared to, but the comment about fear that came after slavery, right? And then now the Frances Cress theory about white genetic annihilation. I've read enough about from Dr. Cress,
sure,
to know that what she said was that this was about maintaining white survival.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that Mandela said, when you watch the movie Mandela, and the white South Africans, whoever was de Klerk, now was saying that we have a fear that you're going to hurt us or take
it.
And he said, we have no desire to create the hell for ourselves that you have created for yourselves. Because, see, now you think that everybody thinks like you and wants to do to you what you did to them. We have no desire to do that. Now, whether or not that's true, I don't know. What I'm saying is that there's a condition that you create when you treat people a particular way, because now you always think that somebody, if you would do it to somebody, they'll do it to you, right? That's the way you think about it.
And it's an unfortunate way.
And why they would be afraid.
Right. It is a fear factor. It's an unfortunate way to live and develop a society. To develop a society that creates the level, I think this is what, I hate to turn everything into politics, but I have to, I ain't going to say a certain political presidential candidate on one side is suggesting that you have to reimagine the entire system because it is so corrupt. It has developed the inordinate separations in every institution that we're mentioning today. It has developed this inequity in housing, in employment, in education. All of this came out of this system, mm-hmm, of superiority, and everybody, mm-hmm, else is subject, right? And then on the other side, there's one who suggests that
you should take it slow, right?
No, that old system that used to make America great, in their eyes, they said America was great because of its policies of segregation and disruption of families and lack of income inequality. He describes this as great.
We want to be Trump.
I wasn't trying to make it like that. I was simply saying that the existence of segregated housing cannot exist without the mass group of people accepting it.
Well, I like what you said, because one of the things that Brother Ken Salo talks about all the time is, how do you reimagine
society?
You have to. But it forces you to think outside of the box, right? That you have been put into. That's why we used to love Lauryn Hill's song. I get out, because I get out of the boxes that you have created for me. And I reimagine myself and redefine myself as to what I know I am. So the one of the reasons why I'm running as a delegate for Bernie Sanders is because I think Bernie is thinking about reimagining this world that we live in, or this country that we live in, and other folks. Even the person that's running against him on the Democratic ticket still just talks about maybe some incremental stuff. So instead of living in a shack with no faucets, let's give you a shack with one faucet. You understand? That's what that sounds like to me. It doesn't sound like a radical redistribution of the wealth. It doesn't sound like a actual radical change in the status quo. To just, you won't even imagine that. Right. So I know you're not going to work to actually bring it forth. And so when I think about black folks, when I think about the black history and think about what it is that we deserve as a people and what we're trying to create in the country, then we have to have something that is actually at least has the courage to stand up to those who have been buying everything out and who would love to exploit the earth, exploit people and everything. We would have to have somebody who's going to step forth and say, hey, I want to reimagine the whole system. And I tell Wells Fargo and all these other big folks to go fly a kite. I don't want your money. I'm not for sale. That's the type of position that you have if you're going to have an actual chance at changing things in the conditions that we currently live under. So that's why, again, like I said, I'm running as a delegate for Bernie. And I think other folks ought to support that as well.
Well, I think the idea...
But the views and opinions expressed here, there's those of the speaker. I got a caller. You go ahead, Sister Carol.
No, go ahead, caller. Callers are most important.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Brother A-Dub?
What's going on, Till?
Good morning.
When we're talking about history, and I hear where we get really lost when we talk about black history. It's not black history. It's real history.
It's what?
The real history and the original history, where history start, where black people start. We was the first people on the earth. We discovered the whole world. When we talk about, they talk about Columbus, the Native Indians. We was here probably 50,000 years before anybody. And that's black people. And we was all over the world. We was in the United States. We was in South America. We was everywhere. They don't know how we got here, so they can't believe the history of us. But they make our history start at like the 1700s. And the way we do, then we're supposed to forget about our real history, where how far it goes back.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't forget about the Holocaust, the Jewish. They make museums and all like that. But they won't put museums about our history, because it's still the truth of the world history. Mm-hmm. And they make us classify as black history, so we lock it into black history. We ought to say world history. World history start with us. And every school, every college, everywhere, you won't find real world history, because they hide it.
I mean, I think that's a pretty profound point that you're making, that if you were to just say world history, it has to start with African people. Right. In fact, the continent of Africa wasn't even called Africa. It was renamed after some white explorer. I mean, the point is that what you're saying is that if you just put everything in its proper context, then the contributions and the achievements or whatever of people of color, of black folks, of African people, whether
would follow a timeline
and fit in with everybody else. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. I get it. I definitely understand where you're coming from. All right. I appreciate that, man.
All right. Thanks.
Also, so we got about 30 minutes left. Time is flying this morning on a 2-hour show. We only got 30 minutes left. I appreciate all the callers. Those of you who are listening, if you want to give us a call at 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. We really want to know, how do you take your history and actually move the people and the world forward?
Right. To a more just outcome. I mean, I think the reason why you have to continue to focus on Black history in a particular month is because there's so much work the rest of the other 11 months to send a negative image or perception of Black people to the world.
I got a text from somebody. It's very profound. I just want, hey, the people are communicating through technology these days. I understand. It says the gated and guarded complexes in Southwest Champaign and downtown is the flip side of the ghetto. The gated and guarded complexes in Southwest Champaign and downtown, or it could be Berrigan Commons, right, in Urbana, is the flip side of the ghetto. We were talking about...
Right, the opposite side of the coin.
Right, the world and the mindset that it creates, right?
Well, not just the mindset, but the actual spatial.
Well, the mind leads to those things, right? If you're not thinking like that, you don't do those things. So they go hand in hand.
They do.
But yes, this physical enclave is a... what do you call it? A presentation or a projection of the mind.
Yes,
right?
It is. Yeah. And it's the same... side, the opposite side of the same coin.
As a man thinketh, so is he.
So when you're talking about poor housing stock in one area, that means good housing stock is in another. And you create policies mm-hmm. and create divisions and income ability that reduces one group to the other group, mm-hmm. which now, is why the housing stock... I asked this question one day on the city council.
Ask it again then, Sister Carrie.
This is just... I appreciate Ken Salo's point here, which housing is a central theme to discrimination. It's a central theme. So I asked them, one of the last meetings I attended on the council, there was a request for an extension in rebates for Berrigan Commons. And the rebates were for new development housing, right? Which mm-hmm. is part of the enterprise zone. And I know this is a complicated topic, but the question was, why aren't there tax rebates available in Urbana on the west, northwest side of the city? And they said, well, because there's no new land that can be developed there. And there's no space to offer these new rebates to new developments. Now, I got to say it again because I want Alderman Ammons to really get what I'm saying here. If you are landlocked in a certain community, meaning i.e. Northwest Urbana is landlocked in a certain community, you will never have new development that builds new property tax base in that area because there's nowhere to build. Therefore, we can't offer you this superb rebate on new development. In order to benefit from such a great offer that the city gives to housing development, mm-hmm. it only goes to wealthy whites in East Urbana. That is a fact. Majority of the people there, maybe 1%, are non-white who are benefiting from this huge tax rebate on their property for not 1 year or 2 years, up to 15 years that they get a tax rebate in Berrigan Commons. And further, the developer wanted to receive those tax rebates even if they hadn't finished the build out.
So this is one of the things
that is institutional in itself.
So I think this is important why we got to tie, you know, the taxes, tax capitalism into this whole conversation. I can't see if it's 03 or which one is it.
Pick up both of them. Go ahead.
There we go. 6545. Go ahead, caller. You on the air.
This is Jim Hyman in Urbana.
Hey, Jim.
On the question of education, Bernie Sanders wants to have free education, and I agree with that. But if you look at the charter of any land-grant school, it's mandated to have free education. That's why they got their land grant. It was free education in the California schools until Ronald Reagan became governor. It was a free education when I went to the University of Wisconsin, Madison. Of course, you had fees to pay, books to buy and all that, but only out-of-state students had to pay a tuition to get in. So it's already on the books. It's a matter of enforcing it. Now, if that can't go through, I would suggest returning back to 1964 in the Freedom Schools in Milwaukee. Attorney Lloyd Barbie, who was an African-American, led that, and they were very successful. They were set up in YMCAs. They were set up in black churches. And we do not have a program for teaching African-American history in the high schools. So I remember back when in Decatur, there was this, well, it was quite a few years ago, all these black kids got into a fight with during a football game, and it was a call-in show. I called in, and I said, well, you admit that 50% of your students drop out because the black curriculum does, or the curriculum does not refer to anything that in their life. It's sort of meaningless. And I said, well, okay, then who's teaching black history in that school? Mm-hmm. Who's teaching labor history? Decatur has a rich history of the labor movement. And they just kind of looked at each other and had no comment on that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Now, if we were to get black reparations for slavery, we could do all of these things. And I don't know where Bernie stands on that, but it should be free education, and especially for black people. Reparations for slavery can go to building up the black communities, and this should happen. And your previous caller was right about fear. It's ethnophobia. Whites are afraid of black people because of all of slavery and the degradation that they have gone through throughout the history of this country, and they deserve reparation. Mm-hmm. So, as an aside, the Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, will be on WILL, you know, Channel 12, TV at 1 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday, and repeated at 1 o'clock in the morning on Friday.
So Vanguard of the Revolution is at 1 a.m. Friday and Wednesday?
Yeah, right.
Friday and Wednesday. Okay.
1 a.m.
Yeah, right. And you said WILL?
This is what they do. Even the American experiences, anything that's controversial, they always put on the overnight. Make it difficult for you to get the information.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for your call, man. I really appreciate it. It's been very insightful and very informative. We always appreciate your call-ins.
Okay,
thanks a lot. Thank you. So stay up late. Folks stay up late on Fridays. You know, I understand. They kick us. They stomp us down. I just watched Saul Williams had a wonderful piece. You know, one of my favorite poets, Saul Williams, talks about, look how they treat us. How they do this, that, and the other. They always, you know, historically you have whether it's white society or the rich folk kick you down, you still got to keep getting up. As Imani say, keep getting up, babe. Keep getting up. So stay up till 1 o'clock and watch Vanguard of the Revolution on WILL. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, Aaron.
I knew that was going to get you. That reparations was going to get you, Brother Ted.
Well, not quite exactly.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, because I'm not going to discuss any history. I mean, to really talk about some of this stuff and to connect the dots, you really got to have more time, you know, to really get deep into it. But the reason why I called, just two things.
Okay.
One, we did have, when we were working with housing, we did have the Concerned Citizens Committee, and then we had the Community Advocacy Depot. And of course, this is when we were pushing back on housing. We didn't want it built like they were building it, you know, before. Mm-hmm. We wanted a little bit more amenities in it. And so we actually got involved. And what we did is that we brought the students from the University of Illinois, and we put the classrooms out in the black community. They were right there on First Street. And what we did is we had the architects, the engineers, and the people doing the urban planning and everything. So we were even planning these homes before they got built.
Mm.
And by working as a nonprofit corporation, because we had connected with the church group called the Interfaith Council, and this was all white churches. And, of course, we all came together. This was after the, you know, the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
We came together. So they worked with us. They were part of the board, and we were the other part of the board, which was CCC, Concerned Citizens Committee, which Evelyn Underwood was on that board,
mm-hmm.
Joan Dorsey, Mother Jones, John Lee Davis, me, and then Dickie Davis, and John Lee Johnson was our lead spokesman on the project.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that. So we did push back. There's a lot of things involved in that. So we built Bradley Park Apartments because we were the nonprofit sponsors. And then we also pushed for that subdivision over there off of 4th Street because at that time they wouldn't allow us to build another housing complex over in Dobbins Down. Because at that time, they didn't want the word. We were going to name it Martin Luther King, and of course, a lot of people on the council were fighting that at that time. They really didn't want that name, so we had to back off. And so we moved and brought it in town, and move it over there in that subdivision where it's located now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was just my first point. The second point I want to bring to you right quick is that if you all get a chance and kind of pass the word around too, is that go to the movie to see Michael Moore's movie. Invading another country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the Savoy. And then what you'll begin to see is he starts comparing all these other countries in terms of how they treat the people in their country, because all these countries that he went to visit, or invade is the way he put it, they are offering free health care, they get free college, free university tuition, all the kids get their meals prepared, they're eating natural food, and he compares those other countries, those developed countries, with the United States. He also talks about the prison population. He compares with how the prison incarceration is being handled in those other countries compared to how they're being handled here in America.
Hmm.
And I think he looks at the protests that takes place over there compared to the protests, you know, that that goes on here in America. And he has some nice clips about the whole civil rights movement and the whole thing dealing with police interaction with the community. So he kind of juxtaposes things that are going over in those developed countries compared to what's going on in America. I think it will kind of fit the person that you're supporting. You certainly would fall right in line with saying, well, this is what Bernie Sanders is after. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not leaning one way or the other, but I kind of thought about you when you said that you were in support of him. And the way that he's looking at solving the problem is making sure the people get treated. And you're sort of like that. You got to have almost like a revolution in order to bring this about, because you're really talking about
a radical change.
A very radical change, a big swoop.
Yes, sir.
When people come into office, and of course, to do that, you're going to have a lot of people on your tailcoat, or you've got to have a lot of people on your tailcoat in order to make some meaningful change.
Well, thanks.
If it's going to be done by vote and legislation, you're going to have to do it. Anything that can't be done that way, then the black population has to then begin to see what they can do for themselves.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Ted.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, man.
Okay, you're welcome now.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Well, there's a thinking about... I'm sorry, Sister Carol, you go right ahead.
Thank you so much.
Okay, your time is up.
I just want to thank the two previous callers, certainly all the callers, but I remember visiting 101-year-old Dr. Kalmanoff, and we videotaped this, as a matter of fact. Dr. Kalmanoff said, he told me at the time, he said, Carol, what we actually need, he said, when I went to school, as a matter of fact, he went to the University of Wisconsin for his undergrad at Madison, and he said, I went to school for free. I didn't have tuition that was putting me in debt and costing more than it would cost for me to buy a home when I graduated from school. And then when he came, ultimately, here to the University of Illinois. He said, we need that kind of change in America for education to be offered to everybody, regardless of their ability to pay. Mm-hmm. And that is what is radically different about what's being offered. So I appreciate the gentleman who called and shared when he went to the university as well.
Which, I mean, we talk about this all the time in the community, that the land grant institution. Now, you can't even go play basketball at the six pack without having an ID card and stuff. I mean, you know what I mean? So the reason why you're at the point of needing a radical change, or what is described as a revolution, is because slowly but surely it has incrementally went in this direction, mm-hmm. that now it's so, you're so far from a land grant institution that you balancing the budget of the university almost on the tuition, which is supposed to not even exist. Right.
I didn't even know that. First of all, I didn't know it either.
But I'm just saying how far you are removed.
You're so far from where you're supposed to be.
Right.
The other thing that the gentleman before Brother Ted called is he spoke about the Freedom Schools. Man, important. I'm reading a book called Ordinary People around the actual ordinary people in the communities of Greenwood, Mississippi. And all the other communities where they established the Freedom Schools, and how critical. One of the ladies who was a sharecropper, she's quoted in the book as saying that she didn't know anything about herself until she came to Freedom School. Mm-hmm. So I think we need a
Dante is sending me a text right now. The Freedom Schools that Vanessa and Dante mm-hmm. and Imani and them were all involved in, and even what Miss Amira was trying to do. I think we get burned out when we see that maybe there's only one or there's only two. I think we have to just continue to try to build those things and don't get burned out when they're gone.
Well, they need and institutional support.
Yeah, I understand. But sometimes you're just not going to get that.
No, the institutional support I'm speaking to is what we control in our own communities, which are the churches. That is the only place that you have institutional support.
Which is where
support.
You're trying to do a math
I'm
tutoring.
I'm trying to do math tutoring, but I can't afford to rent a space to do math tutoring to help young men who want to enter the trades prepare for the part of the exam, which I really do oppose, but the part that requires the math portion, and many of mm-hmm. them have been out of school for a long time. So we want to do some remedial math, but I need a spot to do it in order for me to support this math tutoring. So I'm just putting it out into the ethos.
For the churches to provide a space where you can have somebody who's willing to volunteer to come in and teach the brothers how, you know, the math skills that they need so that they can get into the trade to at least have higher scores on that. That is the things that we can control.
We control that.
Right. Also, Brother Dante sent a text saying that he's seeing that the Vanguard is showing on Tuesday at 8 p.m. and Wednesday at 1 a.m.
Okay.
So Tuesday at 8 p.m.
The Vanguard.
Yeah. And already they said, call Bethel. We got a spot for you possibly.
Excellent. We need to work that, because I really believe the last comment that I wrote down from our caller, which I appreciate, is the adult freedom schools need to be re-implemented. So much of the history that and I think that's what you certainly, Brother Aaron, and all the brothers of the Breakfast Club have been doing with a Thursday night. That's really a freedom school atmosphere, because what I've learned about TIFFs at this that I didn't have enough understanding, and as a member of the council, I kept saying, okay, can you please explain TIFFs to mm-hmm. me? It's a little tricky, right? But we got TIFF education that night.
And this is exactly what we just got another text saying, that the North End Breakfast Club is providing Freedom School. Whether we're doing it when we meet at the Breakfast Club, or whether we do it at the WIP, this is what you're getting when we do the movies and do the dialogue have these folks breaking stuff down for us.
I think that's important. I did make that equation mm-hmm. that the Breakfast Club is providing this. We just got to get the word out to more people so that people can see the value of returning back to the Freedom School model, because actually policy is taking these things out, and you got to educate yourself and your children mm-hmm. in the best way you can. And then finally, I'll just say with Ted, I wrote these things down. Ted mentioning the Concerned Citizens Committee, which again, we don't have the rest of the story, and I appreciate mm-hmm. Ted and Dr. Underwood and all of our elders who carry the knowledge with them, but we need to have our journalists archiving their story so that when they write articles about the academic history of these areas, right, mm-hmm. you can match that academics
and,
with the
and check this out. See, right now, Valerie Ammons could take out her iPad and ask Jerry Ammons to talk about his history growing up in Champaign, Urbana as a six-year-old child when they moved here, right? And it becomes a living, breathing document. Use technology to harness that information. And at some point,
before it's too late,
right? Then you can just upload it, right? To a video or YouTube, Facebook, whatever. And you can share this information and you get it out to people in ways that you could never get it out before. The Concerned Citizens Committee could be, you know, listen, let's just talk about that, Dr. Underwood, on video. Make sure that we capture that information. So instead of having to write it all down, right?
You can record it.
So, okay. So we only got about 5 minutes left, y'all. We need to recap on some announcements. This Monday, you want to do this Monday?
Just reminding people this Monday that we'll have a town hall discussion about gun violence, what we can do about it, what we should be doing about it. And we'll also have stories.
Date, time. We just recap.
This Monday, February 15th. Refreshments at 5 o'clock. Come right after work. We'll start at 5:30.
Where?
At the University YMCA, 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign.
Okay. Because it's on the west side of Wright Street that makes it Champaign. That's very interesting.
Anyway. It is. Ain't that funny?
So, and you've been doing a great job as a representative. You've been doing a great job with these panels. You've been doing a great job getting folks to come in and talk about everything from the water to criminal justice to gun violence, a lot of different stuff. I just want to commend you.
Thank you. I
would definitely be voting for you in November.
Thank you so much. You're
welcome.
I really appreciate you.
Let's see. Yes, indeed. Alex, somebody texted us, Dante said that he was one of the first coordinators of the Freedom Schools, and he recommended visiting the Alex Haley Farm for Freedom School training observation. He said it really enhanced his empathy in our community, the Alex Haley Farm for Freedom School training. Also, it's just a lot of different announcements. Again, I want to encourage you all to come down to the WIP. On Thursdays, it's primarily for African people, African-American folks, because we're trying to create a safe space for us to deal with the issues internally and to learn our history. But from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the WIP, we're down there and we're getting our Freedom School on and we're having real enlightening and sometimes challenging conversations, you know, but certainly we welcome you all to come on down and join us. That is, we thank Brother Sean Williams from Open Up the WIP. But of course, there would be no WIP if it wasn't for, well, it wouldn't be at that location without J.W. Pirtle and some of Dr. Lonnie Clark and some of those folks. And of course, the Breakfast Club for pushing that. This is one thing that I wanted to say before we got out of here, because we hear this term majority minority, right? And so I can't stand using the term minority in relationship to a people, especially to black folks. Right. And so I wanted to just read, you know, we learned in school how important language is. And as an artist, I understand how important language is. And we know how people are defined by language, especially when you're talking about even using your colonizer's language. This a way that you are being defined. And so whether you you got to understand that minority, there's a root word in minority, and the root word of minority is minor. The definition of minor is lesser in importance, seriousness, or significance. Okay, lesser in importance, seriousness, or significance. And major is important, serious, or significant. So you see, you still are, this is what I'm saying about just a new way to reinforce inferiority, right? Sad and sullen is his story, not ours. All right. So you cannot, don't sit back and listen to or let people define our community as the minority community. Even these policies and stuff that are being written. So you are the lesser in importance and lesser in seriousness, lesser in significance community. That's the way that I hear it.
And their policies show that.
Thank you. So, you know, if it, now if you want to just really get down to it, then why not call us the world majority community? All right. See, when you put me in a position, for me personally, or where I am told that you're going to continue to call me lesser of important significance, then I'm going to flip it and say, no, well, I'm actually, when you look at the world, I'm actually of major significance.
You're not actually flipping it. You're dealing with the reality.
The facts and the realities. Yeah, what I'm saying is that I'm trying to be compassionate, right? You know what I mean? But don't put me in a position where I don't have no choice. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Aaron, this is me again.
What's up, Till?
I just want to put something out. You know, we talk about preparing the people for the labor community. I done talked to like three laborers. Two of them is walking distance from the carpenters. Walking distance where they build some apartments on between 6th and Wright. Both of these folks ain't been called out for labor by about 6 times in the last 2 years. So they doing work on their own. And they got this work right where they can just walk to work and don't get called by the labor union.
Okay, so these guys are, wait a minute, let me make sure I'm clear, because we have a what we consider to be a very good working relationship with the laborers, but you telling me there's two African-American men who are laborers who haven't had work, who are not working with the laborers?
Yeah, in 2 years.
Okay, well, call me afterwards, and we're going to get right on top of that.
Okay.
Okay? All right.
But I think we need to be mature about that, too, all this labor going on. Even the ones we want to prepare people for labor, and they ain't send the people out that got the conditions to do the labor right now. They ain't getting called out to work.
Carol, your phone is ringing. Okay, man, we got to go. Our time is up here, man. All right, you all. So listen, I really, both of us on behalf of Carol and myself and all of us down here at WEFT, we really appreciate your calls. Obviously, there are lots of people who are listening to the show. We appreciate your contributions. We appreciate all that you do in the community. So keep coming out. Keep tuning in to Higher Ground from 8 to 10 a.m. Keep listening to WEFT. And of course, we always appreciate your donations down here. Always appreciate your time and energy. But it's this type of stuff. This type of radio and this type of programming that we have to keep alive and well in our communities. And that means sometimes that you got to give a little bit of your finances or give a little bit of your time. We really do need that. And we encourage you to continue doing that and continue supporting WEFT. So as John Lee Johnson would say, well, I got 10 seconds. I'm trying to see if there's anything else.
You're all
right. All right. So just trying to see if there was anything else that I was missing here.
Well, I can say that if you need assistance, I heard the call. Certainly give Brother Aaron a call at 217-721-0934.
Now, y'all see that? How she come in through my phone number out?
Yeah, there you go.
Ain't that? Yeah, call me.
Call
right.
me at 531-1660.
Now you give an office number.
You can hear the panel discussion from the Friday forum that included the better three quarters. Aaron called in a little pink or something. I don't know. He was feeling green. And so that'll be 6 o'clock on Friday. It's a panel discussion that has Evelyn Reynolds and Marlon Mitchell and the esteemed Carol Ammons, who filled in for the man here.
Yes, indeed. I was feeling kind of blue yesterday. So, hey, you all, again, look out for this Norovirus virus. Get you some antibacterial stuff to spray down your areas. And if you have it, don't go any place where you're going to infect everybody else. It's